everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I am your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. We're just 2 days away from Valentine's Day. So, of course, we're going to talk a little bit about romance. And in between, we're going to bookend the show with talk about romance. But in between, with one of my favorite guests ever and good friend, Brad Coates, we're going to talk about the widening gap between men and women, so a little more of the serious side of things, and then we'll have our usual great talk. Bradley Coates is founder of Coates and Fry, and that's Hawaii's largest divorce law firm, and he has a great book that we've discussed on the program before, Divorce with Decency, now in its fifth edition. Welcome back to the program, Bradley.
Aloha, Diana. Aloha to all your listeners, and happy Valentine's Day, everybody.
Yes, and we need to talk about and also people that don't have a Valentine, and that's kind of sad for a lot of people. But gathering information and having a romantic ideas will help, and becoming the best person you can be. I love. There was an actress. She's long gone, but Jean Moreau, the French actress, and she said, age doesn't protect you from love, but love, to some extent, protects you from age. So we're those of us who have a Valentine, who have a love, are very fortunate. And, Brad knows that he knew my late husband, Charlie, and he knows my husband now, Brian. And, I get a certain attitude from both men that men are not really as complicated as many think we are. Men love to hear that their women are happy and that they are the source of that happiness. And, of course, men love to be complimented. Those are some of the positives. But and there are more, of course. But maybe we need to get into the talk about this widening gender gap between men and women. Unless you have something to contribute to romance. We'll end the show with that, too.
Well, it is definitely true in my experience that men, I think in most men's experiences, that men definitely need women big time, probably particularly as they get older, to quote Jean Moreau, because it does provide you a real source of solace to have somebody special in your life. I unfortunately have watched a situation as a divorce attorney where it's getting trickier and trickier to hold long-term relationships together, and that's happening for a variety of reasons. But it is the end result is that it's gotten to be difficult for people to stay married. It starts with an elongated lifetime. It was a lot easier to stay married when you only lived half as long. Nowadays, you almost seem to need a new partner for each stage of your life, or people seem to feel that they do. So it has definitely gotten to be harder to sustain, and let's hope we can give people a few pointers that help them do so today.
Yes. Tonight in New York, for you, it's early afternoon in Hawaii, and here in Seattle, it's a little bit after 3. We've been experiencing snow, which is really unusual in Seattle, and you in Hawaii have been experiencing gale force winds. I hope they've subsided right now.
Things are a little more mellow now. We do have snow on both of our main volcanoes, both Haleakala and Mauna Kea, and on the Big Island of Maui have snow all the way down to 6,000 feet. It's pretty wild.
Yeah. Have you ever skied in Hawaii?
You never
see
that in Hawaii.
I know, but have you ever skied on any of those? We're just digressing a little bit.
No, I ski a lot, but mainly in real ski hills. Those are more novelty ideas. People talk about skiing on the Big Island, skiing in the morning and surfing in the afternoon. That, sounds great, but it's pretty rare.
Yes. So, but we carry on and make the most of the weather conditions. Usually Hawaii is beautiful, and usually Seattle doesn't have snow, so we have to stay positive. But you were saying...
So I can quickly, if you want me to quickly outline, you know, sort of what's happening as far as this widening gender gap. I can do it pretty rapidly. That it basically starts with the fact that, you know, for the last several decades, women's power, their ability to make money, their options, their expectations have all increased rapidly. And, you know, men may not be keeping up. The result may be that that you've got a situation where women are increasingly dissatisfied and they don't need relationships the way they once did. I mean, it used to be that the surest thing for surest way to success, financial success and security for women was marriage. And now that is, you know, far less true. So you've got a situation now where maybe the men need marriage more than women do, and women are the ones who are quickest to act when they act on any discontent they may feel and pull the plug. You know, as I've mentioned on your show before, about 80% of all relationships are ended by women, and about 2/3 of the time it's the women who file for divorce. So guys have got to get to be a little more aware of this whole scenario if they want to stay married.
And in your office or in your colleagues' offices, do you encounter divorcing couples where the man really is sorry that he hasn't been paying more attention to his wife, and you like to talk about the guy being in his lazy boy recliner and just kind of unplugging?
Well, guys are just more complacent in relationships than women are. Women are wanting to have more of this concept that guys are not particularly great at, called communication. We've talked about how women have, you know, far more elaborate communication skills than guys do. They have more communication signals than their fellows do by a substantial. I mean, the woman daily communication level of words and gestures is 20,000 communication signals, whereas a man it's like 7,000. So you've got a situation where guys are not really communicating the way the women feel they should a lot of the time. And the reality of it is, in the divorce biz, is that couples tend to be only as happy as the woman is in the relationship. So, like I say, guys have got some room for improvement here.
And I think that as their consciousness is rising, and that maybe their intentions are changing, and no doubt the Me Too movement for women, well, as you say, it's increased more divisiveness, but it maybe is a wake up call to some men that they really need to pay more attention to women and what they want and what they need.
Well, a lot of it, you know, it starts with economics. A lot of it does. You know, and this has emboldened and made a lot of women feel much, much stronger. I mean, you know, let me just cite you a few quick statistics. 1960, 32% of wives worked. 2008, 61%. 2015, by 2015, the wife is now the main breadwinner in over 25% of U.S. households. That was 7% in 1970. So you've got about a third of the time, married wives are now better educated than their husbands. Women are getting almost 60% of bachelor's and higher degrees. They're getting much more educated. They own a third of all small businesses in the U.S. are now female owned. You know, women are you know, just more serious overall about life. I mean, you know, there are certainly, you know, young women who you know, will be, you know, party girls, you know, going toe for toe with guys. I mean, I've seen a lot of women in doing luge shots of booze and in wet t-shirt contests and acting as crazy as guys do. But women quickly snap out of it. You know, by the time they get to child rearing age, they get serious and you know, they start to go, hey, if I'm going to have this kid, you know, it'd be nice if the father was around and productive, and if we had a roof over our heads to count on, and you know, retirement plan and private school tuition, on and on and on. And then guys oftentimes are still extending their adolescence, you know, indefinitely. And the women get really, really sick of it. And it used to be that no matter how big of a clown your husband was, a lot of times women were trapped in marriage. The old Donna Reed style, Leave It to Beaver kind of marriages of the 50s, women weren't working. They really had nowhere to go. The husband brought home the paycheck, and they didn't have the options they do now. And now they do, and now they're exercising them. So it's a major, major change. And modern women, a lot of them are refusing to marry at all. They're refusing to stay married. You've got a situation where I've quoted these statistics before. 36% of women surveyed said they would not marry their same husbands again. Only 12% of guys say that. And over a third of American women have responded to surveys saying they don't intend to be with the man that they're with 5 years from now. That's interesting, because in my divorce practice, I see that a lot. I'll see a lot of women come in for consultations and say, okay, I plan to get divorced, but I'm going to wait until the kids are grown, because, again, they have this hardwired maternal instinct. You know, guys will leave marriages largely caused by them having met a new gal. Rarely will a guy leave a complacent marriage unless there's some new woman that is enticing him away. So guys will act fast and come into my office, you know, I've got this new track for my life, I'm ready to get divorced. Women will think about it, but they're literally planning on when they're going to pull the plug, and then they do 2/3 of the time.
You quote Maureen Dowd, and the question is, and it's provocative, did the feminist revolution end up benefiting men more than women? Can you talk about that, Brad?
Well, there is a lot of statistics that seem to show that men get happier later in life, and women don't necessarily. And especially men who have, like I say, have got a good supportive wife, it really increases their happiness level. Meanwhile, women have taken on jobs in business and commerce. They're working just as hard as guys are, maybe harder, coming home. They're still doing, you know, the statistics seem to indicate that, you know, between, you know, 60% and 70% of all the housework is still done by women. Rarely do guys do a whole lot more than take out the trash or maybe wash the dishes if they're a truly liberated husband, if you can even get them out of their lazy boy lounger and away from the sports programs for that long. So you've got a situation where women have now got all the stress that guys have in business, and stress is not good for you. You know, now you've got a woman who's come home from board meetings and client deadlines and everything else. She's all stressed out. It's no fun to be stressed. And so women have taken on all the stress of the working world, and have now faced all of that. Plus, they're supposed to do all their womanly deal. So it definitely the possibility is, and Maureen Dowd says this, the midlife crisis is now a woman's issue too, and it really may be.
Yes, and we all know how deleterious stress, excessive stress, can be in terms of for one's health too. That the increased cortisol and adrenaline, and to have chronic stress in your body can affect every organ in your body, because we are programmed.
Not to mention affecting your marriage.
Your marriage and even very possibly your sexual functioning.
Good point.
Yeah.
Sex is an interesting aspect of this. When you talk about what the differences are between, and you're the pro from Dover on this, Diana, but there are huge differences between men's and women's approach to sex, and they may be getting huger. I love statistics, as your audience knows, so let me just indulge in a couple more. 60% of men, but only 35% of women, say sexual activity is important to their lives. Women, many times, prefer foreplay over the actual sex act by about 24%. If you're talking about, you know, achieving actual orgasm, you're talking about 6 to 7 minutes for a man versus 18 minutes of foreplay alone to bring a woman to an actual orgasm. 3 out of 4 women prefer kissing to sex. And I love your phrase, kiss rhymes with bliss. I've heard you say that on your show many times. So
yeah.
the actual sex expectations are inherently different between men and women, men being far more concerned with it It's far more. It's more likely to be the cause of divorce for men than it is for women, and that situation is getting worse.
Yeah,
you want to hear why?
Yeah, I do, of course.
Well, there's a couple of things that are making things exponentially worse. Pornography and chemistry / drugs are actually making things worse. The proliferation of pornography is leading to men having unrealistic, what I call sexpectations in my book, Divorce with Decency, men having unrealistic sexpectations of women. I mean, they're watching all this porn. They've got a probably a pretty attractive 40 or 50 year old wife at home, but she's not 18 anymore, and she's not all pumped up with silicone, and she's not wearing lingerie, and she's not, you know, exhibiting sexual skills that these, you know, 20 year old girls in the porn shows are exhibiting. So men now have tended to objectify women and treat them as objects, which is, you know, something that women have hated to begin with. Then you've got the chemistry part of it. Viagra, ironically, is creating what we call Viagra divorces, where men are getting even weirder sexually. So as if it wasn't bad enough that men skimp on the foreplay, now you take a Viagra pill and you're immediately erect and you're immediately ready for sex as the guy. Meanwhile, the woman would still love to have her 18 minutes of foreplay, but probably isn't getting it. So a lot of feminist icons have really come out saying Viagra is a curse for modern women.
Yes, I know that. But pornography isn't quite so black and white for everybody as you're describing. A lot of more enlightened husbands and wives or partners will watch porn together, especially the porn that's been produced and directed by women, which is a little more female-friendly and has a plot. You know, why is this couple fucking? Well, because they like each other. So it often encourages talk, communication. Now these are more enlightened couples, and the guy has an opportunity.
The key word is enlightened, I think.
Yes, the guy has an opportunity to say, you know, I know that the woman on the screen is a fantasy figure. I can't relate to her, and in fact, that's why one reason why guys who have erectile dysfunction or premature ejaculation do not seem to have it when they're watching porn. They're masturbating in the way they like, and they don't have to worry about pleasing the fantasy woman on the screen. So it's like entertainment and fantasy. It certainly is not sex education. You've heard me talk about that before. It gives people the wrong idea. But it can encourage a communication between, and maybe even ideas of how they could increase their passion in their sex life. Again, these are people that are fairly enlightened and sexually confident, but mostly it has to do with his porn and her pain. Dr. Marty Klein's title of a book, which is very illuminating, really. His porn, her pain.
Oh.
Yeah, and yeah. And some women will bring. I get this too, but Dr. Klein gets it more in Palo Alto because he gets Silicon Valley people coming in. And he'll say that a lot of wives will bring their husbands. Well, he's addicted to porn. Fix him. And Dr. Klein will say, "Well, I don't fix that." And we often don't. We sex therapists don't like the word addiction. We prefer compulsion. So anyway, that's minor. That's semantics, but. So porn doesn't
always
have to be the bad guy.
Well, thank God for your show and a few people that really are enlightened about this, because they, you know, it certainly are benefits to talking, at the very least, talking about all these issues. But think how many, you know, people that are a little more conservative across the country, you know, can't even bring themselves to talk about each other's sexual needs or, you know, even use the word orgasm. I mean, if we weren't on your show and it was pretty liberated, I probably couldn't even talk about how long it takes men versus women to have orgasms. I mean, you know, it's really still below the radar for an awful lot of people. Thank God for your crowd that really has brought enlightenment to the issue. And it's a huge issue. It's a very huge issue for guys, and it's dangerous for women to tend to ignore that issue. you know, the other problem, again, when I talk about chemical advances, so to speak, is that, you know, it used to be that nature sort of took care of this issue and that both genders kind of lost their mojo as they aged out. You know, men's sexual drive begins to decrease by the time they hit 20, women by their mid-30s. But you know, everybody by the time they hit 60, you know, was kind of, you know, on the decline, both genders. And now you've got a situation where they haven't come up with pills for females that get them all excited, whereas Viagra, and it's so widely used, and pornography, mainly watched by males, you've got you know, a situation where male sexuality is still carrying on for another couple of decades beyond where female sexuality often is. So that adds to the problem.
It certainly does. And there are solutions, like some women will go on bioidentical hormone replacement therapy when they hit menopause or just after menopause, and that can help keep her libido. If she gets added testosterone, it can keep her libido. But the most important thing with aging and sexuality is to have an interesting partner and one who is interested. You know, we all crave assurance, if not in words, then in body language, that we are still desirable to our partners. That's one reason it's so important to maintain some kind of sexual life together. And sex does not equal intercourse. There's all these, we've discussed this before, Brad, all these outer course possibilities.
I love that term too.
Yeah, well, it's not original, but it works to know that sex doesn't have to have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And helping couples, I help couples know how to prolong sex. And we touched on kissing. I want to come back to kissing because I think it's one of the most intimate forms of human contact. And it's a very important step in romance, because we are going to interject romance here and there through this conversation we're having. You know, I think kissing should not be regarded as merely a warm-up to whoopee, but kissing should be given the time and attention it deserves. And as you've already pointed out, 3 out of 4 women think kissing is more intimate than having sex. So for women, for many women, it's not foreplay, it's the best sexual play. And that came from a study, an internet study of 100,000 kissers.
100,000 kissers.
Yeah, 100,000 kissers, and you're right.
Well, it would be smart if people would come away from listening to what you say, both genders, and maybe especially males, mm-hmm. you know, telling their spouses that they're still attractive even as they age, or wanting to, you know, kiss them as well as jump on them, or hold them, or hug them, or do all, you know, because this mm-hmm. really is the way I see this. And I don't want to be, you know, classified as a, you know, sexist pig or whatever. You know, I'm not trying to blame this on females having been liberated, because I think it's great that females have been liberated. But from the way it's going to affect society demographically, this change in the economic power of women, the hashtag MeToo movement, you know, even stuff like the Kavanaugh hearings or the Trump administration, all this stuff is driving has the potential to drive a further and further wedge between the genders. And with the increased power of women that are happening the way it is, it's going to be guys that are going to have to make the most changes. First of all, guys have been pigs longer than, you know, than women have, and they've been in charge, and, you know, and you know, when you see how much the sex abuse hotlines call centers go up after the Kavanaugh hearings, you know, you can see how serious a problem physical and sexual abuse of women has been over the years. I mean, it's mm-hmm. staggering mm-hmm. to look at the numbers, and you know, it's a great thing that all this is coming to the fore, and that it's getting out, and that hopefully, you know, men will begin to behave better. But what we're swimming upstream against as guys is the gender solidarity that women feel with their female fellow females. you know, oftentimes more than they feel closeness with their husbands. And guys are just going to have to get, you know, who's the icon of male communicative, you know, understanding behavior? It used to be Alan Alda. I don't know if there's anybody who fits that bill now, but, you know, guys are going to have to get to be more like Alan Alda and less like these, you know, crazy rappers that talk about, you know, abusing women. It's really going to have to change pretty fast, or guys are going to find themselves on the outs.
I agree. And for guys to pay attention to their women, to be kind to her, to be kind, to treat her kindly, that's, you know, if a man does that, the best woman will give and forgive much. So we'll talk maybe a little bit more about ways to treat her kindly as we end the show with romance, to tie it in with Valentine's Day, in about 2 days.
It increases the importance of you know, counselors, you know, like yourselves, sex therapists. This is gonna get to be more and more of a serious issue, where the genders are gonna have to learn to communicate, or the women are gonna, you know, just at least Western women. I mean, you know, bear in mind, this is still a trend that really is only in, you know, maybe half of the world at best. I mean, you know, and probably more than half of the world, you know, men are still accustomed to having, you know, more than one wife or mistresses, or it's, you know, it's acceptable in all kinds of other cultures, certainly the Muslim cultures and other cultures. But in Western cultures, it has changed dramatically. And like I say, unless you want to, you know, move to Iran and, you know, have three or four wives as a guy, you better try and hold on to the wife you got here in the Western world, because it's changing big time here.
Big time. And men are perhaps hardwired to want to spread their seed. I mean, if we go back from an evolutionary point of view, so it's not as natural, I'm putting that in quotes, for a guy to be monogamous. We feel like it's and a really good book that addresses all of this is Dr. Christopher Ryan's book, Sex at Dawn. And that's not about having sex early in the morning. It's about communities going back to pre-agriculture, when everything was shared, including sexual partners and food. And men would line up waiting for their turn to have intercourse with a woman in those women started to be looked at as property along about the time of the agricultural revolution. So there were a lot of changes, and then we have, of course, overlays of the church and all kinds of complications as we've evolved.
It is much more hardwired biologically in men to, you know, to be a little more widespread in their affections than I think women probably believe or understand or care to understand. I can tell you from firsthand experience that it's not an easy thing to explain to females how males may be hardwired to behave the way they do. No woman I've talked to, you know, really wants to appreciate that factor. But the reality of it is that, you know, many men cheat simply because it is their nature. In the animal world, most species are not monogamous by nature. That's especially true amongst the apes and monkeys, which are the closest relatives of men. Chimpanzees are totally promiscuous, hence the expression monkey business. And then you have what you referred to as the evolutionary theory of cheating, which is that basically males who remain faithful can only produce a few offspring. And I'm talking, you know, again, Darwin survival of the fittest kind of analysis. Men who remain faithful, only a few offspring. Men who go unfaithful can produce new offspring, you know, every couple of days, giving them a distinct biological advantage for survival of their gene pool. There's no advantage for a female to have more than one mate. In fact, it can work to her disadvantage because, you know, she needs a primary mate to stick around and help her raise the kids. And in the days of the saber-toothed tiger, he had to be the guy, you know, at the cave entrance clubbing the tigers while she nurtured the child. So mm-hmm. you know, women have a whole different biological determinative on monogamy than do males. But like I say, try as a guy to explain that to a Wahine, and you will find yourself having a former girlfriend very quickly.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think some research around vasopressin, also pronounced vasopressin, is interesting, and comes out of some studies, research of voles. A vole is like kind of a cousin of a rat. I'm sorry, I'm getting a call interrupt. I'll ignore it. Cousin of the rat, but the prairie vole is one of the few mammals that actually bond with their mates, because the vole's genetic traits give scientists clues about why humans stray from theirs. And it turns out that there's a switch inside the brain that controls the desire to form close ties. And this research was done initially by Emory University's psychiatrist, Professor Larry Young. And he found that the switch in voles, he found it, and the gene that regulates the release of vasopressin is a hormone that activates receptors in the brain to regulate behavior. So it's possible that for some humans, they may not have, and especially if a man has a father who kind of was promiscuous and played around, they may not, biologically, they may not have as much vasopressin, which helps them feel attached and protective, and like the little prairie vole memorizing his partner, smell and her everything. So I think that's really interesting about vasopressin and the bonding hormone.
I like that.
This is all complicated. There are so many factors, right? So many factors.
Well, you know, one thing that I think ties in with you know, your particular field of sexual counseling trying to improve the ability and the understanding of sex for both genders is the fact that in my experience as a divorce lawyer, and in the I've written that damn Divorce with Decency book 5 different times by the University of Hawaii Press, and so I'm always updating it over a period of, I guess, 25 years now. And
yes.
You know, what's realistic is that, you know, like I say, sex is more important to males than it is probably to females as a general rule. I realize I'm overgeneralizing. And
yeah,
it is
as a general rule, that's true.
It does seem to be the main reason why men will leave marriages. So if those two aspects are correct, you know, the simplest way, you know, for females that want to preserve their marriages, and like we got through saying, a lot of them may not want to anymore, may be to focus on you know, the importance of sex and act accordingly, develop their sexual skills, stay as involved and sexy as they can, rather than conceding that, you know, that as we get older, sex is out the window. You know, they women may want to take it, you know, I don't know if they want to become porn addicts the way guys do, but you know, they may want to take it more seriously. I know an awful lot of women that say, well, you know, yeah, we quit having sex years ago, but, you know, that shouldn't really change anything, should it? And I get clients like that all the time, and a lot of times they're on the other side of a divorce from a guy who's left his wife for his younger secretary. So if all those phenomena are traceably accurate, then the one thing that you know you might want to think about as far as, you know, fixes for Valentine's Day are to try and fix the sexual relations between the genders. And that's I think that's where Dr. Diana Wiley comes in.
It often does, and because I think the most common presenting problem from couples that I get is mismatched desire, where the woman has low desire and the man has high desire, and the man's so tired of feeling rejected, rejected, rejected. So sometimes then his body responds to by having, especially if he's an older guy, by coming up with erectile dysfunction, you know, because the penis doesn't lie, and if he's feeling rejected, so that it creates a whole
lie.
Cycle.
I love that. You
well,
are
it
too
doesn't.
Much.
It doesn't, does it? next week,
I've noticed
I have
that
Dr.
mine is occasionally misinformed, but yes, you're probably right about not outright lying.
Next week, I'm talking to Dr. Dudley Danoff, a urologist, and his book. He had to change the title of his book because it was too provocative, apparently. But the original title of his book was Penis Power, and he had to change it to Men's Health and some other, you know, sort of boring title. But Penis Power got your attention because, yeah, the penis doesn't lie. And so it's the mismatched desire is a huge problem, and when the couple can get back on track. And you've heard me say this before, but I think, you know, you fix the sexual relationship, which in my view is at the core of a relationship, then they're often divorce is avoided. But
yeah.
But they often need to have a little extra professional help to get there.
Well,
and you, I know you can't
have a hard time even talking about it.
Yeah, I know. And of course, in Hawaii, now I'm stereotyping a little bit, but you have lots of Asians who their culture just doesn't allow them to talk so openly about things like sexuality, their own and others. Wouldn't you say that's
true?
Well,
it's not a really well-publicized aspect of things. I mean, when I start to do a divorce for a couple, and a lot of times, you know, my whole divorce with decency deal in this law firm, and it's what's made the Coates and Frye law firm the biggest divorce firm in Hawaii for, you know, three or four decades now, is mm-hmm. the fact that we don't just go right down the path to divorce. We actually try and see if there isn't a way to save marriages, and I've saved hundreds of them over the years. And when I isolate the fact that sex may be a bottom line that's not being met, and I think trying to refer somebody to a sex therapist that might help get people back on the right track, you know, I now that you've left town, I'm at a loss as to who to even refer them to around here. I mean, it's not an area that is highly publicized or you know really even you know well known.
Yeah. Probably a little more in certain cities on the mainland. You know, people are getting more sophisticated about their sexual relationship and how important it is. And because I have people looking for a sex therapist, so they'll Google sex therapist in Seattle and they come up with Dr. Diana Wiley, and they can go to my website, drdianawiley.com, and see that, get lots of information there. And I also get referrals through Psychology Today, the magazine, but people are often searching, and it's interestingly enough, it's the guy who often calls me, the husband or the male partner, you know, and they like it that I'm a sex therapist because they want to talk about sex. Some counselors don't talk about sex; they're not trained to do it. They're trained in marriage counseling, but they don't talk much about sex. So I also get referrals from other therapists who don't have the expertise in human sexuality, and so they know to refer. But it's very complicated. It needs to, I think, it's sort of a mind-body thing, too, particularly with women. Women need to, she oftentimes she wants to want, and she also wants, she wants somebody, or he wants somebody, to want to have sex with the other person, to want to have it, the desire, you know? So
That is huge. I think that's absolutely
huge.
I also think it's relatively rare. I don't know. I you know, I'm no expert on sex the way you are. I mean, I've had sex a couple times, but over the years, but I can't. My experience has been both professionally and personally is that it's pretty rare that you run across a woman that says, you know, I'm hot for you, let's do it. You know, most of the time it's the guy pushing the edge of the envelope and the women going along. Like I say, maybe that's different amongst the younger generation. I'm no expert on the millennials or the Z generation or whatever the hell they're calling them nowadays. Maybe women are, you know, much more aggressive and assertive, but, you know, over the years that I've known, you know, both clients and, you know, women in my own life, it is pretty rare that you get a woman who's going to be the initiator.
Yeah, and to initiate. That's right. It's a small study of 500 men said that what they wanted in a female partner was most what they wanted was enthusiasm, number one, and a woman who would initiate on occasion. I mean, men like that. Men need this too. They feel accepted and desired, and if a woman is enthusiastic, I mean, that just, men, as I said at the opening of the show, men like to know that they're making their woman happy.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and it makes them happy to have a happy.
And the male ego may be more fragile than you know, we like to let on. So, yeah, I mean, having a woman say, hey, you know, you're handsome and I'm hot for you, you know, that can turn things around, I think.
Yes, I absolutely agree, but it takes some work. And a lot of people, well, you know this from a slightly different perspective, but similar in many ways, divorce, doing divorce work versus counseling work that I do. But a lot of people just aren't willing to put in the time and the work. They'll just throw in the towel and start over. And of course, that's easier for a man to do, as you point out. It's easier for a man
to
do.
Well, you know, it's hard. I mean, like I say, you know, if you're trying to have a conversation on some of these, you know, touchier issues, literally touchy issues, physically touchy issues, you know, about, you know, hey, how can we improve our sex life or whatever, you know, a lot of times it's met with a, you know, a wall of resistance, and, you know, and you give up even talking about it. And like you say, you know, a few times of trying to, you know, prod your partner into having sex, and if that's met with resistance, you quit trying before long. And it really, like I say, it doesn't reach the stage where you say, hey, let's both go to a counselor and see what we can do about this. It's just, you know, it's just, we just quit talking about it. It turns into a blank space.
And it also increases the likelihood of a man having an affair or going outside of his marriage. It totally does. Because, you know, I think I've thought about this. In our daily lives, it turns out practically everyone wants something from us. So imagine being in love with and having as a sexual partner a person who only wants to laugh, to touch, to make us feel good. What a relief. And who?
Oh, you're in heaven,
Wouldn't you do anything for such a person? And I tell people that if you're in a monogamous long-term relationship and you want to stay that way, you've got to trick your brain. And because, of course, as we've talked about before, that our primary erogenous zone is the brain. So you got to make time for sex, go away together. Sometimes I think adultery or being unfaithful is just the desire to have a place where no one wants anything of you but pleasure. Pleasure is underrated. We need more pleasure. I'm all for having more pleasure. And,
well,
you know,
I'm with
have
you on that
pleasure.
Like I say, I think that one of the real services that you do for mankind and womankind is to at least bring these issues to the fore. Because it is just talking about it really helps to figure it out. And
yes.
It's just, like I say, I find so few people that, you know, I get clients in my office all the time. Well, we've been, you know, we've been sleeping in separate bedrooms for 4 or 5 years. I'm scratching my head going, really? And yet, you know, people get, it's almost easier for people to fall into those patterns that are, you know, that are, you know, more simplistic and demand less of you as a human being, as a communicator, than it is to get out there and communicate actively on it. It's funny.
So couples in your office, couples in my office, can take note of the ease with which you speak about these sexual issues and other issues that are so important for deeper emotional intimacy. People will not have deep, valuable physical intimacy if they don't have emotional intimacy. It's really, really important. And emotional intimacy requires good communication. And, you know, if you don't tell your partner what you need and want and desire, it's like going on a treasure hunt without any clues. You simply have to get to the place where, and I give homework assignments that will help the couple begin to communicate better and touch more without vaginal penetration.
That's clever. I like that idea.
Yeah. Well, it's caressing exercises. You say in your outline that women are more responsive to touch than men, and that's possible. But do you remember where you got that from?
Well, I've got a quote in my book, and I can't find it right now. But you know, the women's female sensitivity to touch is, you know, something like 10 times greater than a man.
Yes.
I'm not sure how totally accurate that is, but I think it's definitely true that female sense of touch is way superior to men's, and that is that's part of the problem, because you know, for men, you know, what really drives them is that, you know, I want to have an orgasm, and for women it's a lot more than that. Women have got a lot more serious and lengthier set of criteria in so many things in life. It's interesting that, you know, men are the ones who fall in love more quickly, more viscerally, often mm-hmm. based on, you know, raw physical attraction. You know, ugh, you know, caveman style. She got big boobs. I want her. You know, I mean, it's mm-hmm. it's and you know, a lot of that is built into the female biology. I mean, you know, women that are youthful and curvaceous, you know, are probably more attractive as a breeding partner. I mean, a lot of this goes back to the caveman age. I mean, you talk to a lot of modern women in particular, and they say, hey, you know, shouldn't we have just transcended all this? I mean, you know, I'm tired of hearing about how men used to be in the Stone Age, but you know, you watch any of these nature channels, you know, they've gotten so amazing with these nature channels, Planet Earth, all these ones that, you know, 80% of the program and 80% drive and imperative is the drive to procreate. You watch the young male lion try and take out the older male lion so he can have a harem of female lionesses. I mean, you know, it's almost all animals, the drive to propagate, the women coming into heat and the animals being able to smell it from miles away. I mean, you know, it's serious and it's biological, and you know, we're not all that different from animals, although we like to certainly think we are. So mm-hmm. You know, getting back to basics is probably something that people need to understand. For sure it is true with men. You know, when it comes mm-hmm. to romance, men tend to be the first in and the last out. You would think that maybe it would be the wahines, which is Hawaiian for women. You always make me point that out. You know, that would be the first to fall in love, or the first to say I love you. It's actually guys. Usually it's about a male about 61% of the time that's going to be the first to say I love you, usually only about, you know, 3.5 months into a relationship. Whereas, you know, the women are, you know, they're thinking, well, you know, I'm maybe attracted to this guy, but you know, how good a provider is he going to be? And you know, what's his credit rating here? You know, whatever kind of other criteria women are going through in their minds, guys, it's just, you know, you know, I want this woman. She's attractive to me. I'm going to tell her I love her, and then I'm going to try and jump on her. And, and you know, women don't see the humor in that sometimes. But it is, you know, men are a lot more shallow, I think, than women are. And that's really one of the aspects of what I was trying to talk about in the show is that's going to become more and more of a deal breaker as women have the power to reject shallower and shallower men. And, you know, it's pretty crazy. Not only are women getting stronger, but, you know, on the flip side, you know, young women are no longer enamored with their husband's aging party animal behavior, and they, you know, they may want to move on in search of a more established and dependable career man. There's a quote, if you don't mind my going through it, talking about the decline in the this is by Dr. John Roseman, who's a parenting counselor. Divorce is a major contributor to the collapse of the American male, and the collapse of the American male is a major contributor to divorce. And he talks about it, I'm going to quote it. For the first time in history, females are emancipating earlier and more successfully than males. This crop of young adult males is certainly shaping up to be the most underachieving generation of men, potentially, you know, even perpetual boys, extended adolescents, to ever inhabit the United States. When one hears of an individual in their mid-30s who's still living at home or largely dependent on parents for support or has no clear sense of direction in life, it's almost always a male. It starts out in high school where nearly every video game addict is male. And then you look at something like and that's the end of his quote, then you look at something like the opioid crisis or how much longer men will stay addicted to alcohol or drugs longer than females will. You know, guys are you know, kind of weakening in society and women are getting stronger. And that's really, that's going to be a trend that people are going to have to get used to. And they're going to have to get used to it in a different way than just, you know, you know, these crazy feminists are, you know, they're too pushy and we're going to ignore them. They're not, you know, this women's movement is not going away. The power of women in American society is not going away. You could argue that, you know, from the days of the caveman days where men were physically stronger and able to club their female mates into submission. And now you've got, you know, female women in the Air Force that can punch a button and send a drone to, you know, to drop a cruise missile just as easily as a guy can. You know, even in warfare and physical power, it's starting to even out. Economic power is starting to even out. So guys are going to have to get the hang of what women want.
Yes, and I think we should, because we stop a few minutes before the top of the hour, I think we should segue into some final statements about romance, since the day after tomorrow is Valentine's Day. And, you know, I said this earlier, and I've said this on shows with you before, but kindness seems to be right at the top of the list in terms of what women want from a man. Right at the top. A man to treat her kindly, and if a man does that, the best woman will give and forgive a whole lot. So I have a list for the guys, treating her kindly. Treating her kindly, that's all, that's everything. So my list is call her, return her calls. And this is going to be a challenge for some of the younger people that mostly text and are the part of the, yeah, anyway. But return her calls, show up on time. And I like this one, give her shelter as well as freedom. You know, that means to be protective as well as acknowledging that she's an independent soul. Pay attention to the attention she pays to you. You know, paying attention. And when you go to the kitchen, offer to bring back two, T-W-O. Here's another important point on my list. Treat a mistake like a mistake, not a crime. How about that one? Isn't that true?
It's definitely true.
Make such a big deal about something.
And going back to your kitchen one, I've often heard people say that just feeding a woman, you know, is kind of a show of really caring. You know, I mean, nice dinners, even though they may not be a guy's favorite, and certainly, frankly, they're not mine. But I, you know, taking a woman out to a nice dinner is pretty important, I guess.
Yep. It is. It's very important. Another point on the list is even if she says her shoulders are fine now, go on rubbing a little more. When we were talking about touch a bit ago, massage, of course, is so important. Everybody has better sex when they're relaxed. So take turns touching each other, massaging each other. It's so important. Ask again when she says nothing's wrong. Then promise she'll be ready to hear about it when she's ready to talk about it. And a couple more points on this list. Be patient. One-third more than you feel you can be patient. Be patient. And during an argument, give in one-third sooner than you'd really want to, about half the time.
That John Gray talks about in his communication style, guys are always single-minded, you know, problem solvers, and they tend to do that in relationships. So don't try to, quote, fix her. Just listen.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
You know, guys are always trying to jump in and say, well, you know, if there's no immediate solution to this problem, why are we even talking about it? And, you know, you should do it this way, and let's move on. And that's not necessarily what the woman wants to do.
The guy should not try to fix it. He should try to understand it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think if a guy, now this is a Valentine's suggestion, you know, for the guy to say to his woman, you know, you make me feel lucky. You really make me feel lucky and fortunate. And, you know, that often will win her heart. So we're hoping that people have a good, loving, fun Valentine's Day. And do you have more to contribute to that final little saying before we have to go?
No, I like your list. I think that's great. And you know, I think realistically, men are going to have to learn to understand and satisfy women, and, you know, at least in the Western world, because mm-hmm. women's progress is basically unstoppable in our society, and they're going to be driving the train before we know it, and that's a major change from the old Mad Men days. And so figure that out, guys, and happy Valentine's Day, everybody.
Yes, happy Valentine's Day, everybody. And Brad, I'll be in touch with you off the air to have you back.
Okay.
Bye, everybody.
E se ti perderai nel labirinto di un amaro autore.